When I was growing up, one of the traditions that my cousins and I had, look at that guy, isn't he great? It just puts a smile on your face. You think, man, what I wouldn't give to just be on that, yeah, right? Sloth on a tree. That was like my yesterday. That was our whole family's yesterday, was we were kind of sloths on trees. But as we get started, so when I was, you know, elementary school or middle school-ish, and my cousins would come over, one of the things that we would do after we would play a game, and maybe it got too heated, or we kind of be in transition, was that we had this like animal book encyclopedia from somewhere, like a yard sale or something. And so if you don't know what an encyclopedia is, it's like if you printed out Wikipedia for animals and just put them in books, like that's what it was. But it was full like of all of these just goofy looking animals that you go, dude, how would we ever have gotten this, right? Or some of our vacation Bible school animals are often like that. Like we had a whole year of just weird animals, and either by their name or by their characteristics, they look like you had a bunch of spare parts, right? Like from like a toy box, you just kind of put them together. But there's clearly some kind of reason, and you learn about the way that they have adapted, and this is the way that they are because of the way that they are. Anyway, and so my cousins and I would just love this. We called them laugh books because, man, no matter where we were, they put a smile on our face. And so as we think about that and think about how incredibly diverse our world is, I can't help but think, like, the story that we heard, that kind of origin story for us, you know, of God creating and making and then putting together the DNA and the flesh and the blood and the guts and all this stuff so that then adaptation can happen and we can have these just beautifully, wonderfully weird animals is pretty awesome, right? And then on top of that, when all of creation was over, on that sixth day, God created humanity and said that it wasn't just good, but very good. Pretty awesome. And then God rested on that seventh day. And so we have this creative maker who saw the chaos. So those first, you know, the first verses of Genesis are, you know, in the beginning, the earth was a formless void, and God's spirit swept over the deep, swept over the chaos. And so we have this creator who has taken the chaos of the world. Anybody encounter that recently, right? And creates not only something beautiful and habitable and life-sustaining, but also something that gives order to all of it, bringing order out of the chaos. And so God creates, and it's beautiful, and creating this, you know, brings order into life in the way that we see there's order in this now broken world. And so today, we begin to make this journey towards the manger at the end of December at Christmas. And so we're calling this series, we're calling it, you know, Finding Your Christmas Spirit, because I think oftentimes in the chaos, in the brokenness, in the clutter of this journey from, well, before Thanksgiving at this point, right, to December through Christmas, there's all kinds of voices saying, here's what's important, here's what you need, here's what we have to do together, and all of these conflicting voices come over, and they can sometimes overshadow that spirit of Christmas that allows us to step into the wonder and the mystery that is what Christmas is. And so for the next few weeks or so, we're going to be talking about some of the gifts that the Christmas spirit gives to us. And as we do that, we're going to kind of unpack them a little bit, and then hopefully we take that Christmas spirit and we don't just leave it in the wrapping paper box for December, but that we live that Christmas spirit out every single day of our lives. And so today we come with this first gift of the Christmas spirit, that is creativity. So we're going to start at the beginning because that feels like a good place to start, right? So we're going to make our journey through kind of the whole of Scripture up until when Jesus is born, kind of throughout these next few weeks. But today we talk about unwrapping the gift of creativity. And so what we hear in the Scripture is that God has formed us and made us in the image of God. You know, the memory verse that you have, it says that we have been made God-like, Eugene Peterson in his translation calls it. How cool is that, right? To kind of think and let your head wrap around that. Psalm 139, that's right here, is that I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Have you ever made something and your hands are trembling because of the kind of perfect mixture of like anxiety and excitement about what this thing could be? That's why I like to do all of my kind of creating, or most of my creating, on Photoshop, where if I screw something up, I can just hit Control Z and then we go back a step, right? Because sometimes if you cut in the wrong place or something else, man, you got to start all over. But you've been fearfully and wonderfully made, created in the image of God. Out of the chaos became order, and that's where we are. And then part of that, kind of being made in the image of God and having those characteristics of God, is that gift of being creative, of seeing either chaos or seeing a problem or seeing something beautiful that you just want to magnify, and in some way step into that chaos and let your imagination run wild in a way that would be unthinkable to somebody else. Because you have a perspective, you have a gift of knowing and a bias and an idea of what's going on better or different than anybody else. And so we have been made to create. We've been made to order, even those first commandments. Like, so Adam and Eve, they're in the garden, and then God, you know, God kind of does the, like, if you're familiar with the Spider-Man or, you know, kind of thing where Uncle Ben looks at Peter Parker and he says, with great power, say it with me, comes great responsibility, right? And then we pretty quickly, on one of those origins, there's a guy that comes and runs away who's stealing money, and Peter just kind of lets him go because it's not his problem. Right? That's kind of where we are then in the scripture that Jillian read, is that there's, or a little bit after what Jillian read, where there's the fall and goes, well, there's this one thing, but nobody's looking, so let us take the fruit. But this is our origin story, is that God says, be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth, and some translations say subdue it. But really what it means is be faithful stewards over it. Take the chaos of creation. Adam, your first job is to name the weird stuff that I make. How cool is that job, right? You look at things and you're like, that looks like a whatever. I mean, he must have, like, you know, that looks a banana, and then that's just an orange. Like, there's, you know, so he must have been tired when he got to orange, but whatever. But like, man, that is something cool, that the first thing that we do is that we are looking for that creative action and movement. And so our job then, as those who can and have the stewardship of creation, whether that be in the physical arts, whether that be in landscaping, whether that be in the construction that you do, whatever that might be, our job then becomes to point to the one, either directly or through the spirit of our creation, point to the one that is the master creator, of the one whose creative brushstrokes are throughout all of creation. Yeah, our fingerprints are on the things that we've made, but then let that reflect back. And so there's this wonderful painting by Matthias Grunewald, finished in 1520 or so, right? And so this is this triptych that has doors kind of that fold in and out. But what he's painted here in the crucifixion scene is kind of our job. And so the guy right there going, like that, because doesn't that look kind of weird? But anyway, but that's John the Baptist. Now, for Grunewald, what he would have known is that in reading scripture, John had already been separated from his head at this point in the story, okay? And so John was no longer there. He wasn't at the crucifixion, but his whole point and purpose of this triptych was that we were called to be the people who in all that we do and all that we are pointing towards Christ. And so we have a lot of scripture from John the Baptist's perspective, because his whole idea, his whole job was to point to Jesus and say from passages in Isaiah, you know, make way for the Lord, make the mountains come down low and the valleys come high, so that the path might be made straight for the Messiah, the one who is coming in the name of God. Our goal in the way that we create, in the way that we allow our lives to speak, is to point to the one who brings order into all of the chaos, whose spirit swept over the deep. And, you know, we see that, and that's our job. That's in the naming. That's in the doing. And then the liturgy, you know, today when we come for communion, what we say is, you know, take ourselves as a holy and living sacrifice. Our whole lives become a testament, God, to the thing that we offer up on the altar. Isn't that powerful? Isn't that good imagery? That everything beforehand, before Jesus, everything that came up to the altar, it was no longer living. It had no breath. And yet we say, we are going to come with something of breadth and worth and meaning and value and creation and creativity. And we're going to set ourselves on the altar and we're going to offer our whole selves to be this. But yet it doesn't take us too long to realize that what happens when we lose sight of the promise, of the gift. And so there's one thing, there's one tree in the middle that they can't, that we can't take from, right? And all of a sudden, Adam and Eve are sitting there going, that's the one. They take the fruit and they say, my precious, right? This is it. This is what we're fixated on. And the one thing that we can't have, we do, because all of a sudden, when we're pointing to God with all of our creativity, we see those three fingers pointing back at us and we go, oh, maybe this is about me and not about God. And all of a sudden, what happens when we start to point to ourselves, saying that look at the Creator, look at me, look at everything that I am doing, look at the way that I am bringing, you know, order into chaos, look at the way that my law rules, look at the way that I am all that there is. And we start pointing fingers back at ourselves and getting fixated on that, like Schmeagol, like Gollum in the Lord of the Rings series. You know, all of a sudden, everything revolves around, and for him, the ring, right? And so you clutch it and you hold that creation and the thing that you hold dear so tightly. And what happens when we get those kind of perspectives messed up is that our world becomes so much smaller, right? For Gollum, it was the size of a ring. And what happens then also is that if we then are the be-all, end-all, the weight of the world then becomes on our shoulders, that if we stop, the world's going to stop. If I take a sick day, the world's going to fall apart. And if anybody has retired or shifted jobs, you know that the world doesn't stop, right? That it continues moving on. But it feels like we cannot stop ourselves. And then finally, what happens and what creeps in, Jill's the last passage of what Jill had is that they felt no shame, right? After the fall, what happens is they hear God coming through the garden, and they cover themselves because they were ashamed that they had no clothes on. What? So what happens when we start to point at ourselves? Shame starts to creep in. Self-doubt starts to creep in. And all of then some of that creativity that we have starts to get squozing out. So we hold on to those things so tightly. My wife, Katie, is trying to write her first book, and she's in the process of that. And she said that in some of these writing classes, one of the top things that happens is that you create this work, and you don't let anybody touch it or read it or edit it or anything else, because the words have become too holy to change. And sometimes when we don't point to God, but we point to ourselves, those things that we make become too holy that we squeeze out any kind of community, any kind of hope of them changing, and any hope that the God might work within that, and that the Spirit just starts to ooze right out, and there's no space left. And we don't let anybody see it because of the shame and the guilt that we had that says, this might be rejected, and it's so a piece of who I am that I couldn't possibly try to let it live free and fly on its own. Can't possibly let anybody else enjoy this creation that I've made that others could enjoy, but it's so powerful to me that nobody else can see it. And so then we get stuck there. We get stuck in this place of shame and sin and brokenness and holding on too tightly and feeling like we are weighed down by the world. We feel like we are bound to the things that we have chosen over God. And then in a backwater country where nobody expected anything good to come from, one day there was a child laying in a food trough that makes this new way. And so this creative God who spoke everything into creation, that made order out of the chaos, then says, but I can do something new. And the question is, are we holding and clinging on to the things that we have known so tightly that we're not willing to let our grip go enough to say, God might be doing a new thing? Because at the communion table then, we see that the chains of sin and shame and brokenness, they're gone. And so one of the things that we did today was I had leftover craft supplies, Play-Doh and things like that, right? And you see them sitting there. And one of the things that I noticed is that some of our younger kids just went over to them and started actually collecting them and like, I'm taking these home and then I'm going to get some more, right? And for some of us, we might go, well, that kind of looks enticing, but the thing that I would make would be dumb and silly. at the communion table, what it's saying is, remember, you're offering yourself as a holy and living sacrifice, that I'm not making anything that is dumb or silly, and that you don't have to be chained to that sin and that shame that you have been carrying around for so long. And so this coming week, what I want to do, but right before we kind of make the communion table this thing that we have, that through this communion table we see a way that God is making a new thing in our lives. I want to leave you with this quote, and it comes from an esteemed professor. Oh, look, Ben, you nailed it. Look at that, right? Okay, so here's what I want. Our final words. This was remade with Kate McKinnon doing the voice of Miss Frizzle, and it's amazing, okay? But I love this idea because this is the opposite of shame and sin, right? This is the thing that lets us go and be the people that we are called to be. So you're going to read this with me out loud with gusto, because this is our call for tomorrow and the next day and the next day until we meet again. Are you ready? Here we go. Take chances. Get messy. Oh, get messy. Dude, how did I mess? Let's try it again, because I messed up on the make mistakes part. Ready? Here we go. Here we go. Ready? 1, 2, 3. Take chances. Make mistakes. Get messy. Yes, perfect. You guys did it.